Welcome back, everybody. Welcome to all of you to our continuation of chapter 6. Today, we're going to be doing verse 22 and 23. Are you there, Lou?
I am.
Okay, great. Good to have you.
This is going to be a tough episode to top the last one. If anyone missed episode 68, go back and check that one. Very important. That was a good one.
I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, but don't skip 68 to get here. You got to go back.
Yeah, it's by the way, it probably is not a good idea to just skip around, by the way.
Yep.
You should always go in order so that you understand, because the Gita, believe it or not, even though it's so long, 18 chapters, it is brilliantly composed so that one thought leads to the other. And as you get further and further into it, you read it over and over again, you realize the intelligence behind the creation of this and why step one, step two, then step three. You can't go to step three, then go back and read step one and then step two.
Right.
Anyway, so today is verse 22. And thank you for saying that, Lou. Verse 22 says, having obtained that, which is becoming one with the Atman, having obtained that, he thinks no other, he meaning the person get become self-realized and having achieved the Atman, he thinks no other gain is superior, no other gain to that of gaining the Atman. Mm-hmm. He becomes established in the Atman. He is not moved by even great sorrow, although he feels it. So what this refers to, first of all, let's understand that the body, which we unfortunately identify with so much, is the least, lowest of all of our assets. Superior to the body is the mind. Above the mind comes the intellect. And then the energy that's given to the intellect, the mind, and the body is coming from the Atman, which is like gas or petrol in a car. It enlivens us. It gives us life. So you may say, give me an example of how the body is less than the mind. And Gautamji always gave us an example of a mother saying she had one favorite dessert that she had, like an ice cream. Right. And she had just one dish of it left. Or that may not be as good an example of as a sweet. And she says, I've been looking forward to eating this all day. I was just going to have my dinner and eat it. And then her little toddler comes running up to her and says, mommy, I like that. Can I have it?
Yeah.
And of course, most mothers, probably most fathers, sisters, mothers, you know, all these wives, spouses, husbands would say, sure, have it. If we're lucky enough to have somebody who loves us that much.
Right.
So the mother gives it to the toddler and sees the joy on the toddler's face and says, oh, mommy, thank you so much. That was so good. Eats it, you know, and runs away to play. And she's so happy. Her mind is so happy that her toddler became happy.
Right.
The body, her tongue, didn't get to eat it, although she'd been looking forward to eating it. But she says, I'm satisfied that my toddler ate it and he's happy. So this happens a lot with, in India, I've seen people starving and the mother is taking what little food they have and feeding it to the child and being happy that the child is eating. So we first need to recognize in this verse that the Atman is the most superior. And as the Atman is absorbing, as the intellect and mind get absorbed into the Atman, become one, and get rid of its possessions and the worldly pleasures, the happiness, the bliss that they realize is superior to anything that they can get from worldly pleasures. So that's the first thing. Second thing we have to realize is that all sorrow, all depression, all comes from loss of any kind. Recognize and underline this, write it down and say, all sorrow comes from loss. You may say, nah, what about when I love my somebody and that person dies? I feel sorrow because that person's died. But if you really analyze it and you're honest with yourself, mm-hmm. what you're sorrowful about is what you have lost in losing that person. Whatever it is that that person created, gave, or achieved for you, without that person's presence as a live person, you are losing. and therefore you are sorrowful for it. So it would take too long for us to go through every example, because a lot of people find that they say, no, that's not true. Sorrow is not only from loss, but really bottom line is all sorrow is from loss. So the more you're attached to things, the more loss could come about. So when you are gaining yourself spiritually, growing spiritually, your desire for possessions drops off. And I can tell you this from personal examples. But you either have to believe me or look at all the other people who have far exceeded my levels of achievement and see these Mahatmas who just give up all their attachment to all possessions. So think of Gautam Jain always gave us this example of a pen, a Montblanc pen that you have. You say, I love this pen. This is my pen. You lose it. Your heart is broken. As you become more spiritual, you say, it's just a pen. I lost it. Then your wristwatch. And after the wristwatch, maybe your car. After your car, your house. At some point, your family. And what, as you grow spiritually, your desire for these possessions, these attachments, become less and less. And the reason for that is your intellect starts to become stronger and become more aware that these possessions don't mean to you as much importance as you were attaching to them before.
Yeah, the example that you've used a lot is one I really like in this instance, where you, the difference between owning a car and renting a car.
Yes.
You own a car and you hit a pothole and you ding it up, or someone hits your door with their door and you become very upset at that because it's your car, you're attached to it. Happens with a rental, however, you just go on because you realize it's just a rental. You're not attached to it.
That's same exactly right.
Instance. It's a difference between having something and being attached to something.
That's right. So, you know, I actually thought of that example yesterday, because as you look around me over here, you can see that this is not the same surroundings that I normally am in, because we're in a rented house. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful house, got a swimming pool. It's right next to the beach, and it's in Cape Cod.
Nice.
Those of us, yeah, it is nice. Those of us who are from Massachusetts, like Lou and I, know that Cape Cod is right by the beach. It's a little outgrowth into the ocean. Beautiful beaches, beautiful areas, and this house is rented. Now, yesterday there was a leak. If you look at these ceilings above me, you might be able to see the ceiling that has the leak. The tile was just about to fall down. There was so much water behind it.
Right.
Since it was a rented house, I picked up the phone, called the owner and said, hey, I don't know what to do about this. And he said, oh my goodness. His heart was in his throat.
Yep.
He said, I hope it's not this. I hope it's not that. I'll send the plumber tomorrow morning. But I said, okay, I'll wait for the plumber. I know I did nothing wrong. And the plumber came the next day, and it was a leaky pipe inside the wall, and he had to open it and fix it. But you know what? I slept like a baby. I said,
right.
You know, the plumber kept apologizing to me, and I said, hey, you know, just deal with the owner. Why? Because I was not attached to this. I said, this is rent, part of the rental thing. I did nothing wrong. It wasn't because of me. I feel bad for the man who owns this house. But what was he going through versus what was I going through?
Right. You were lost equanimity because you had no attachment to the house.
Yes, unless it were in my house, in my home. And the same thing had happened. And if my wife had told me, look at this, we're having a, I would be frantic looking for plumbers, calling them, saying, what happened? What is going to happen? So that attachment, that possession is what causes the mind this restlessness. Mm-hmm. And what we are taught is that the less attachment you have, the less possessions you have, the more free you feel. One other example that I like is when you go to these really large supermarkets. All these markets are now called supermarkets, but there's some really massive supermarkets.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever seen them, Lou. I've seen them in New York and New Jersey. Massive. There must be like 30, 40 aisles in them. And you say, how am I ever going to get through this? But there are people that push their carts up and down, every aisle. And by the time they finish the third aisle, they're already one cart is full. They need to get a second cart for themselves.
Hmm.
As opposed to a person that says, hey, you know what? This aisle is for pets. I don't have any pets. I don't need to go down this aisle.
Right.
This aisle is for meats. I don't eat meat, so I don't need to go down this. I'm a vegan. I don't drink any cows, milk, or I don't drink any, eat any eggs. I don't need to go down this. I don't need any dairy. So what are you left
funny,
with?
Funny, when I'm in the supermarket, sometimes I get to a point in my shopping where I realize I'm just looking for something to buy. I don't really need I'm just wandering the aisles, and it's like, it's time to get out of here because I don't really need what I'm looking for.
There you go. Yeah. So this attachment saying, I need this, I need this, I need this, or I use this, I use this, or I use this, compared to somebody that says, I don't need anything. I don't have anything. Like Lou saying, I don't need to be attached to anything. I don't need to buy anything. Let me just get out of here.
Yeah.
So it's that what it is with life, in that having obtained the joy of being attached to the Atman, he thinks no other gain is superior. He becomes established in the Atman. Nothing else satisfies him. He is not, now he talks about not being moved by even great sorrow, although he feels it. So sorrow, as we said, comes from loss. And when you're attached to possessions like pens, pencils, watches, cars, houses, then those possessions cause you loss, including loved ones. So this a person who is spiritually grown, who is self-realized, does feel emotions. It's not that he doesn't, but they do not overpower him. He's able to feel his emotions. He's not a stone. But I remember reading about some self-realized person that was supposed to give a lecture. 1,000 people were supposed to attend, and he got a message that his son had passed away. And they looked at him, they thought he's going to cancel everything and rush back to his family where his son had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, he just went into the room, sat there for a while, how long I don't know, came out, and they said, so are you? Should we cancel? And he said, no, I'm going to give the lecture, and then I'm going to go home. Anybody else would have been devastated, crying. He just gave the lecture. Nobody would know that his son had passed away. And then when it was finished, then he left to go back home. So he did what he ought to do. Was he sad? Surely he was sad. He went into the room, sat there for a while. He feels his emotions. He's not a stone. But he's able to allow his emotions not to overpower him. And that's the key. So plants have no emotions. Animals have emotions, and they act on their emotions. Like those, I've never had a dog, so I don't know. But those people who have dogs say that those animals have emotions. I spoke to a young woman who had just brought in 2 hens and a rooster to her home in Louisiana. And she was telling me that when the hens lay their eggs, and she goes in the morning and takes the eggs and brings them in, she says the sorrow that she recognizes that the hens are looking for their eggs, looking in their nest, running around frantic to say, where's that egg that I laid, is just heartbreaking for her. And so I did not know that even hens run around looking for their eggs when they're laid like that in a natural setting, because most eggs nowadays come from commercial settings.
Right.
So animals feel the emotions, and then they act on their emotions, like the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Humans feel the emotions. Those of us who are at the levels of animals act on our emotions. Those of us who raise ourselves above those emotions can feel the emotion, but don't necessarily have to act on them. So that's verse 22. Let's do verse 23 now. And that says, let it be known as the yoga of severing the union with pain. Let it be known as the yoga of severing the union with pain. That yoga should be practiced with determination and with an undespairing mind. So it says the yoga of separating from pain. Why does it say that? Because to get to the Atman should be no pain, right? What pain are you severing from? Very important for us to realize that we are all born because you have unfulfilled wishes. That's the first thing you have to recognize, that because you have unfulfilled desires is why you took birth in the first place. If you didn't have vasanas, you wouldn't be born. It's to fulfill those vasanas and desires that you took a body and you came onto this earth. Those unfulfilled desires now lead to, as we've spoken about before, when you don't get your wishes fulfilled, you become angry. When your wishes are fulfilled and you get what you're hoping for, you're afraid that you're going to lose it. You become attached to it. You become greedy because you want more of it. All of these different emotions come about all because you have the underlying vasana or desire. Those desires are what are referred to here as pain. Having those desires and the resultant emotions is what is painful to you. So, as a child, you know children cry when they don't get their desires fulfilled. That is painful to them. As they grow up and become adults, teenagers, young children, adults, they become acclimatized to this pain and sorrow. They don't realize that they have this pain. So what it means is that throughout your life, from the time you're born, you have these unfulfilled vasanas and desires, and you've become acclimatized to having this pain. Whereas from the time you were born, you were united with your Atman. Your Atman was never separate from you. You were united. It is because you then chose to identify with your body, with your mind, with your intellect, because you chose to then identify with these desires, you became united with pain. And this verse is saying, using yoga to sever yourself from that pain, you can then become one with the Atman. So you recognize, we've said before, that when you meditate, you don't have to do anything. You just have to let go of this desire. So it's two analogies. One is letting go of a hot charcoal. You're holding on to a hot charcoal in your hand. It's burning you, and you're still holding on to it. If you let go of it, the pain goes away. One. Second, you recognize those of us who have heard of monkeys, how they are caught. In India, they take a coconut, they cut off the top of the coconut, so there's a hole in there. They scoop out all the coconut meat from inside, just enough for a small little hole to go in. Now, inside that, they put rice mixed with oil and sugar, lots of sugar. So when a monkey comes, if he puts his hand down, those of you who are listening on SoundCloud or some iPod won't be able to see my gestures, but those of you who are looking at this on Facebook can. The hand goes in because the hole is small enough, but when he makes a fist, it doesn't come out because the fist is much larger, cannot come out. Yeah. The only way to get the hand out is to open the hand, let go of the rice, and pull the hand out. Those of you who are just listening can probably just imagine this. The monkey comes, puts his hand in, touches the rice with his fingers, pulls it out, puts the fingers to his mouth, says, "Oh, I love that taste of that sweetness." He puts his hand in, he sees that there's a lot of rice in there, wants to grab a handful of it, but then his hand doesn't come out. He hears the drums of the hunters coming from behind, drumming loudly, and he's starting to get afraid because he knows he's going to be captured. He could easily run away if he opens his hand, lets go of the rice, pulls out his hand, and then flies away, runs away. But the monkeys are captured because they, most of them or all of them, don't have the wherewithal to let go of that. The greed for that rice is so much that they try to pull, and they cannot bring themselves to let go of the rice. And then they get captured.
Yeah.
And they get neither the rice nor the sugar, but they're captured by these hunters. So that is us in this world doing that. So we were talking about,
severing your union with pain.
Severing your union with pain, yes. So the richest person wants more wealth. You have more unfulfilled desires for wealth. Let's say your big issue is wealth, then your desires are going to be for wealth. If your vasanas, main vasanas, is for beauty, your desire is going to be for more beauty. So, sorry about that, my friends. I'm getting a little distracted over here. So it's like dropping the hot charcoal, remembering your own desires. And now recognize that you had these desires when you were a child. When you were in grammar school, you said, if only I get this, I'll be so happy. You got it. Then you got to high school. You had desires there and you got those fulfilled. You got to college. You became an adult. And all those desires, if you look back throughout your life, all those desires that you thought would make you happy, you got them and you're still looking for something more. So that's essentially what this verse number 23 says, that let it be known that as the yoga of severing the union with pain, that yoga should be practiced with determination and an undespairing mind. So you have to keep focusing on the fact that the pain is to get rid of the desires, and then you automatically become one with the Atman. So the third example I was going to give you, and this is where I forgot, my apologies, but it's like falling asleep. You know, I am so sleepy right now. I want to go to sleep. I just can't wait till I hit the pillow and I'll be able to sleep. But what happens? I put my head on the pillow and I say, oh, should I check my messages?
Yeah.
Should I check my cell phone? You open the cell phone. Right away, your mind is awake, is looking at whatever you found on the cell phone. Or you say, I better turn the air conditioner on or off or open the windows, whatever it is. All of those actions, because of those desires, take you away from sleep. But if you get rid of all that and you just say, I have no desires for looking at the cell phone or the windows or the air conditioner, put your head on the pillow, you'll be asleep in no time.
Right.
So the same thing with yoga, meditation. If you get rid of your desires for different things and you're just at peace within yourself, because you need to do nothing, you're just like with sleep, you just need to be able to close your eyes, get rid of all those other external draws or pulls that are pulling you, and you should be able to go to sleep. There, thus, you should be able to meditate and become closer, if not one with the Atman.
So peace isn't necessarily something you need to gain. It's about whisking away all the distractions and all the things that keep you from it.
Yeah, so we tend to always think that we need to get something, we need to work at it, you know, do something, we need to do something. Here is the exact opposite. Just like with sleep, you don't need to do anything to sleep. You just need to get rid of the doing. Same thing with getting
whatever is preventing you from sleeping.
Exactly. So the same thing with meditation or becoming one with the Atman. You need to get rid of whatever desires there are preventing you from getting there. So I hope that was interesting to you, friends, and to you, Lou. And I thank you for your support as always.
These past couple episodes have been great. The last three have actually been really excellent. So make sure you listen to them all together.
Thanks for your support, Lou.